Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your host from SteelersDepot.com, where you can find all your latest and greatest Steelers news. It's Dave Bryan and Alex Cazzora, always Lynn, talking Steelers. And now, here's Dave and Alex.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast, Season 14, Episode 126. He's Dave Bryan. I'm Alex Cazzora, SteelersDepot.com. Thanks for being back with us here this Wednesday, Steelers Nation, this first day of May, really entering the summer months here for all of us in the Pittsburgh Steelers as they get ready for rookie minicamp in a couple of weekends from now. So, Dave, how you doing? Glad to be back with you.
Yeah, it's post-draft time, and we're getting a longer list of rookie minicamp invites slowly starting to build here, and that'll be the next big thing as we continue to sort through the draft picks and dig deeper into the tape. And we'll talk a little bit more, I think, about at least one of the undrafted guys today, and a little bit more Roman Wiltson talk. And I think we're continuing to have a couple of other undrafted profiles go up on the site today as well, too, right?
Yeah, we'll have one go up today on Welshoff, the edge from Charlotte. Tomorrow we'll have Winman, the linebacker from Michigan State, and that'll complete the list because we already had reports pre-draft on Beanie Bishop and John Rhys Plumlee. We'll talk about Dejon Edwards, the back from Georgia, today with a report on him Tuesday. But yeah, short list overall. We do want to talk about Omar Khan, what he had to say on some media rounds on Tuesday and Wednesday. I do want to briefly mention, since you talked about it, a couple of the rookie minicamp tryouts that we know, and these are not going to be guys we'll spend much time on until unless they were to get signed to the 90-man roster out of rookie minicamp. But we will kind of mention just some of the names here. Sean Stevens is arguably the most notable rookie who's accepted an invite to the Steelers minicamp. He's also accepted one from the Eagles. He'll go to Philadelphia this weekend for their minicamp on a tryout basis. If he's not signed there, then he will come to Pittsburgh. He is, of course, the cousin of Joey Porter Jr. Pittsburgh had shown some interest in the pre-draft process, invited him to the Michigan State Pro Day, had a really good workout overall, but undersized D2 corners. So he'll go Philadelphia this weekend, Pittsburgh next weekend. Anthony Everett, the veteran former Ravens Lions corner, is also going to attend rookie minicamp. Veterans do get a chance sometimes to come in for that three-day weekend, so we'll see if he gets signed, but that is a notable name as well.
Yeah, no. Once again, there'll be several first-year players, I think, from the Steelers. That list probably isn't going to be too terribly long, though. We'll see what happens with Corey Trice Jr. coming off of the injury and all like that. And, you know, obviously the 7 draft picks, the 5 undrafted guys, and then a slew of invites here. So that's something we'll start looking forward to here. All right, Omar Khan keeping us busy the last 24 hours, right?
He has. He's been on the Pat McAfee show yesterday and then was on DVE Wednesday morning. And what is the biggest takeaway that you have from what he's had to say post-draft?
Nothing is imminent, but talks continue.
And that's referring to the Brian McFadden tweet on, I forget when that was, Monday or Tuesday, saying that Omar Khan was close to add an explosive playmaker. And stay tuned, essentially. Now, he confirmed it was not Patrick Peterson. That's where my mind went to first. Not that Patrick Peterson's an explosive playmaker. He's not. But just given the fact that that's his cousin, they host the podcast together, and it would have made sense in the moment to expect Peterson to return without this team drafting a slot corner and really having little there. But according to McFadden, it's not. Now, he's not saying who it is. No one is saying who it is. And now Omar Khan is saying nothing is even close to occurring. So I have no doubt they're trying to find a veteran wideout to bring in, but trying to find that guy and getting that guy are two different things.
Yeah, Omar said on DVE this morning, and this morning being Wednesday morning, there's nothing in the works right now, nothing close to happening. I can tell you conversations continue, but there's nothing close to happening. So, boy, who has it? Which wide receiver around the league now has not been I don't even know if rumored's even the right word.
Speculated.
kind of thing. Man, everybody trying to connect the dots. You know, obviously, you know, Cortland Sutton, the Ayuk, the Debo Samuel, the who else they trying to throw in there? DK Metcalf. Jeez, I mean, everybody and their brother to this point. So we'll just sit and wait and, you know, see if anything develops here. But, you know, the big takeaway here, and it's been kind of ours for, you know, since the end of the draft, is they need to add to that room, and they need someone that can play outside. They need a more, you know, an upgrade over guys like Van Jefferson and Quez Watkins, and they'll do it at some point. It's just a matter of when, I think, and how big of name that actually ends up being. You know, the interesting thing here, I've been kind of watching, and it's just something that I do. You know, it's been a week now since it was reported that Alex Highsmith had his contract restructured. Normally, within 7 days, that hits the NFLPA public salary cap report page. And as of this morning, it hasn't. Now, does that mean, you know, wake up tomorrow morning and it hits? I mean, it's possible. And it's not like there's been a large amount of transactions across the NFL, you know, in the last week that would, because, so, you know, the NFLPA salary cap report page, it isn't in real time. It's more clerical than anything else. It's not uncommon for it to run 3, 4, 5 days, even a week behind. So I find that kind of interesting. And once again, we could wake up tomorrow morning and the restructure show, you know, on that side of things. Now, if we get to say Saturday morning, and it still hasn't hit, it will really have you scratching your head at that point, thinking, okay, did they have the all this paperwork of the restructure ready to go? And at a moment's notice, if they needed the additional cap space, then they could turn it in and make a deal go through. Yeah, I suppose that could be the case, but it's just something else that, you know, it's kind of the things that I watch that probably nobody else watches, but I kind of found interesting, because I really would have expected the restructure to hit the NFLPA public salary cap page by now. But not that it means anything. Once again, this team at some point during the offseason was probably going to have to restructure Alex Highsmith. I just kind of envision, unless it was going to be for a move to add, you know, somebody during this time off season, that restructure normally would have, you know, I was thinking was going to get done later in the off season. But anyway, it's just something to think about and something to watch. And obviously when and if it does hit the NFLPA public page, I'll pass along the word there.
Sure. And there is that lag, that delay that you speak of. I mean, Omar Khan said they did it at his post press conference interview. He had mentioned that they had restructured the Highsmith contract. So in their mind, it sounded like that it had already occurred, not that it was even just on the ready.
Right. I mean, because he said the restructure that you speak of, or something along the lines, was one of his answers, wasn't it?
Right. He didn't refute the idea that they had done it.
Right. Right. But once again, maybe they had the paperwork ready to go. But anyway, we'll get to what's today. Today's Wednesday. I mean, you would think that thing would hit by Saturday, but what, you know, that public salary cap report page is just for the public. But generally it, you know, once something hits, it hits. What I'm saying is once it's actually filed in the NFLPA database, then it shows up. So anyway.
Sure. We'll keep you posted for sure. We'll check in on Friday and Monday and take it from there. But I agree, they're going to add a veteran receiver. The question is who and how. Will it be a trade? Will it be a free agent route? Zay Jones got released yesterday. That's part of the post-draft veteran kind of purge that takes place on rosters often. Now, Zay Jones is not really a big play kind of a guy. I don't think he's really an ideal fit, but he's a veteran who was productive in 2022, it would have been, before An injury limited him in 2023. I mentioned DJ Chark as well, along with the many, many trade candidates maybe out there in Sutton and Ayuk, et cetera. So we'll stand by.
Yeah, we'll stand by. That's all we can do at this point, because once again, everybody and their brother is trying to be linked to the Steelers at this point.
The other position that Pittsburgh, I think, needs to add a veteran to is the slot cornerback spot. And Omar Khan confirming on DV this morning, they did meet with Cam Sutton. He said a couple weeks ago, reporting was, I think, Jerry Dulac 2 Mondays ago, I believe it would have been, to meet with Cam Sutton. Nothing really imminent there. It didn't sound like from Omar Khan, but did confirm they had met with him to kind of touch base and see where everybody was at. Will Patrick Peterson return? Again, apparently not the name McFadden is referring to in his Twitter tease the other day, but I think regardless, they will be adding a slot corner at some point as well.
Yeah, we wait for the imminent to become non-imminent.
Now, Khan said they are comfortable with their guys at nickel. I wish you would have given a name. Yeah. I don't know what name he's comfortable with right now.
I'm not buying it.
He's got big Duke Dawson vibes. We love Duke Dawson. He'll be great and gets the first team rep in camp. And now he got hurt last year, but Duke Dawson was not going to be your slot corner to start 2023.
And look, you know, it's fun to think about maybe what Beanie Bishop can show during camp and all like that. But I mean, you know, even if he were to make the team, I mean, a lot would have to happen for him to be a week one guy that you rely on, right?
Sure. Putting a big risk in that. There's Josiah Scott, who played for the Eagles a little bit a couple years back. And I'm not sure what other slot guys they're looking at. Thomas Graham. I'm not sure if Kalen Barnes will be inside out. We know Luke Barcoo's an outside kind of a guy. So there are some names there, but how many of them have done anything at all, or at least recently? I think you have to get a veteran in there.
Yeah, like the team saying they got center options, right? To go out and draft a center in the second round, right?
We love Nate Herbig. Herbig's going to be just a great option. And yeah, take Zach Frazier the second that you can. You're sweating bullets to make sure Frazier gets there to you at 51. So Khan, to his credit, has a good poker face, but we know this team needs some improvements.
Look, you don't expect a man to come out and tell us every single move that he's going to make, right?
Sure. Sure. I mean, and the fact that he even admitted to the Cam Sutton meeting was a little surprising. Right. I'm not saying that's a negative thing, but he's generally, you know, going to keep those things pretty quiet. That obviously is charged in a lot of different ways right now as Sutton deals through the legal situation. Will that happen? I don't know. I still think if that's going to happen, it's going to take a bit of time for the legal situation to become a little more clear. It's better than where it was from his standpoint, no longer facing felony charges. But I mean, he just got released by the Lions a couple weeks ago. So I think you still let that. He's a guy that could come in June, early July, miss spring ball. That's fine. He'll pick up the defense right away. He knows the defense, hasn't changed. He's smart. You don't have to go sign this guy tomorrow.
Yeah, they probably just want to get inside of his head a little bit, see where things stand, and you know, start watching to see how the process works itself out. Look, we said the other day in the show, you know, how many times has this team gotten even through their OTA weeks of practices there, and players not under contract with the team at that time wind up not only under contract, but wind up making the 53-man roster. So that's going to be the case again. It's just a matter, is it going to be one, two, or three players or something along those lines there? So they need to add to that room. I'm sure they will add to that room when it comes to, you know, both wide receiver and slot corner, and then go from there. But those are the two most glaring needs at this time. And We'll have to just sit and wait. I mean, we can speculate 6, 7, 8 names here, but you know, it doesn't really do any good.
Let me just read the whole quote on Sutton, because I do think it's important to share the full context. He says, quote, "We'll see. We did meet with Cam. I think it was a couple weeks ago. It was more than just about the situation here. We just want to see how he was doing. We spent 6 years with Cam, and they were a good 6 years with Cam. It was a good experience. And obviously he had the opportunity to go to Detroit. Had to make it a business decision, but we'll see," end quote, and then goes on to talk about the depth at the position. So, I mean, some of it may have just been checking on him personally, and maybe even just kind of giving him a little bit of hope here in a situation that's been difficult for a lot of reasons over the last couple of months, and just letting him know that there are some people still connected to him, where I'm sure in a world where he's been cut and has lost contact with a lot of people he was talking to before. So, as Khan said, we'll see if something does occur. I think it's going to be a little while before any potential contract talks or signing occurs with Cam Sutton.
All right, what else we got, newsy? Anything else from Con?
Not much overall. I'm trying to think from the McAfee show what he had said. I mean, again, excited about the quarterback room, but really just kind of standard information there. I can kind of go through our posts yesterday. Have not listened to the full DVE interview yet that just occurred here early Wednesday morning. Anything else that I'm missing, though, for maybe DVE or McAfee?
Not that I can say, at least not giant newsworthy.
Okay, let me just double check here. Mentioned about beefing up the O-line, getting Steelers guys that fit the culture, which is reflected in offensive line heavy draft. Pretty standard stuff there overall. And again, very comfortable, they said, with Peyton Wilson's medical situation. Would not have taken him if he was not medically cleared by team doctors.
What did Fa'atano had to say on a radio interview?
Yeah, that was pretty interesting. He was on the, and this is the name of the show, and so this is just to, you know, radio stuff, the Softy and Dick Show out there in Seattle. Everyone knows that show. He was
12-year-old Dave showed up.
Yeah, careful. Well, listen, I mean, they weren't hiding the name of that show for sure. They know what they were doing there. He was on there and talking about a couple of different things. The Pittsburgh was very anxious to see if he would fall to them at number 20. And was calling them, I think, when the Rams were on the clock at 19, saying, have you heard about any potential trade-ups? And I think so. Pittsburgh might have been making a play for him, for Fa'atano. If someone was trying to come up for him, they might have matched that and tried to go up there and get him as well. And so they just, going back to Omar Khan speaking after the pick, basically on pins and needles to see if he would actually fall all the way to them, and he did. So it felt like Pittsburgh was truly, you know, thrilled, but also very anxious to see if he would actually make it all the way down to them.
Yeah, absolutely. And you kind of get vibes of David DeCastro several years ago, right? Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. Again, West Coast kind of a guy that falls, you know, more than you think that he would, right into your laps. He also mentioned Fa'atano did, that he thinks, his agent at least thinks, that maybe teams were throwing out there some of the injury concerns about that knee to try to get his stock to slip a little bit. I don't know how true either of those things are. Teams would do that. I think teams would, but how effective is that? Teams have their medical information. They don't really care what appears in an Albert Breer article, but he thinks that might be maybe one thing teams were doing to try to get him to fall a little bit. He says his knees are good, has not had an issue since 2021, never missed a game, never missed a practice. I'm not losing sleep over his knees.
I mean, the teams all have the medicals, right? I mean, how are you going to slip something out there that maybe another team doesn't know, you know?
Yeah, again, I think it's ineffective if that's even the attempt. I guess you could try to at least make teams second guess themselves and go back and think, but it wasn't even a story. It was really just tucked away in the middle of an Albert Breer article that I'm sure teams weren't necessarily running to read from the medical aspect, because they have all the medical information on these guys. So that's just what he says, and we're passing it along.
You know, We talk about these guys all, you know, in pre-draft, and almost treat it like a fantasy football draft. But these guys, I mean, you look at this is billions, I mean, billion-dollar corporations making decisions on these guys, right? And all these tools at their disposal. It's just it's hard to believe some of these rumors. In other words, that you don't know. I mean, shame on you if you don't know enough medical history on some of these guys, especially first round draft picks that you're going to invest fully guaranteed contracts in, right? So, you hear some of these reports sometimes, and then you think you stop and you pause and you look at the big picture and what a big business it is, and a lot of the things just don't add up sometimes in my head, you know. And in other words, I can't imagine teams didn't have the full reports on on everything related to Fa'atano.
Sure, I'm positive they did. Now, a guy could fall not because it was leaked, but because there is an underlying medical issue that teams are aware of,
right,
and that is causing a guy to fall. That is possible. And is that the case with him? We'll never really know for sure. And maybe unless his career does end short because of knee problems, then it may make sense in, you know, multi-year hindsight. But why do you think he fell? Because I have a couple ideas, but he was projected to be a top 10, top 15 pick that goes to 20.
Well, first and foremost, I think I think a lot of teams around the league probably viewed him as a guard. I mean, you hear Nick Saban talk. You hear, I mean, who are some of the other
Dane Brugler and
Dane Brugler,
Jeremiah.
Some of the, and not that these guys are the end all do all, but I mean, the general consensus seemed to be that even Mike Martz, I think, wasn't he another one?
I believe so, yes.
And once again, it's opinions here, but the general consensus, I think, has been that, okay, maybe he can play some tackle, but this kid's going to be a bona fide guard if they have to move and all like that. We've talked a lot about, you know, how many times do you see guys under true tackles under 6'5" drafted? Now, once again, the saving grace with him was the arm length and all like that. That's the thing that's going to allow him to at least start his NFL career with the Steelers at one of the tackle spots there. I think more than anything that because he did not have the ideal say measurables of a tackle, because there was a quarterback run at the top here, I think a lot of contributing factors led to him going down to 20.
Yeah, I think it was certainly those factors. The fact that six quarterbacks went in the top 12, which has never happened before, and that naturally pushes down other positions like offensive line, like cornerbacks. We saw the cornerbacks didn't go until 22, which most mock drafts had, you know, Mitchell or Arnold or both going top 20. So I think that's a product of it. I think it was still a strong tackle class overall, and there were a couple names off the board before him. And yeah, maybe some concerns about where he would play. Would he go to guard? Could he play a tackle? That also, I think, impacted things as well. So I think it was a variety of reasons. I think it was less so about the leaking of the medical and maybe even the medical itself. I think it was probably more just those other factors. And he fell to 20. He didn't fall to 40. I mean, he fell, you know, maybe five or so spots from his projection.
Right. And we're not even talking about 31, 32, you know, end of the first round there. Yeah. I mean, you got what, six quarterbacks? How many wide receivers went? And look, some teams three. Just, how many of those teams probably really didn't need a tackle?
A couple, I'm sure.
You know, so you've got that in play as well, too. Look, I mean, there's no reason to worry about his knee until there's a reason to worry about his knee.
Exactly. Yeah, I'm not concerned about it. He's not concerned about it. The team's not concerned about it. So we all move on.
Right.
All right, Dave, we had mentioned about your contextualization of Roman Wilson in 2023. You know, slot snaps look good there. Not much on the outside. We talked about, let's go back to 21, where you played more on the outside. What could we glean from there? So you have, I'm not sure, is the post up or
no,
is it almost
no,
up?
No, I've got to get the data. I've got it all charted and all. I've just got to put together the data at this point. I will tell you this just after watching. Let's see how many actual targets there were. Now, look, we're going from 2023 contextualization to 2021. We're skipping over to 2022 because, once again, he played more in the slot and there. The reason we're going to 2021 is because it looked like he played more on the outside there. And he had, when you throw out the no plays, which I think there were like three of those in 2021, he had 39 total targets in 2021. There were quite a few differences in just watching the tape of those plays alone. First and foremost, in 2023, they used him in motion quite a bit at the snap of the football. Mm-hmm. On plays that he was that he was ultimately targeted on. You barely see that at all way back in 2021. In fact, on the targets, I have listed just two of those plays on targets to Roman Wilson in 2021 that he was in motion at the snap of the football. While it was predominantly him listing as either being a left, in other words, outside wide receiver or a right outside wide receiver, you see a lot of some condensed stuff on that along with it. You don't see or bunch kind of bunch stuff and all like that. And even so, you don't see much of him being pressed at the line of scrimmage. Okay. So there, you're still seeing a lot of free release type situations with him. Now, I will say, however, that one of the catches, in fact, I'll send you this to you right now, a DM.
Ooh, a preview.
So that you can see this one particular play against Georgia in 2021.
It's a clip from the broadcast?
Yeah.
Okay. Hopefully the audio shouldn't play through. I always get nervous on audio as it comes through the headset, but I'll mute here if it does.
Yeah. You'll see that play right there. And it's against Georgia. That was in the Orange Bowl, I think, against Georgia versus Michigan. You can see him kind of against a man mm-hmm. press situation, and him get off the ball and catch the deep pass down the right side of the field there. I know this makes for great podcasting. People can't see it, but I haven't passed this along to Alex yet, so I wanted to see it in real time. That to me might be his best rep on the outside against a corner up on the line of scrimmage. And it was against Georgia, and it was a deep pass down the field, and it was completed.
Yeah, against Darion Kendrick, who I know ended up running slow whenever he came out a couple years back, but I mean, was considered a good corner for them. So it was not some sort of backup or injury replacement. Yeah, it was a good stem to the outside. He sacked him and tracked the ball and made the catch. So like to see more of that, but those were the concerns that I had, that he was more of a slot guy that has to work on the outside again. Will he play some outside? Sure. Can he do it? Probably some, but is he that true every down outside type receiver? Is that, you know, one-to-one replacement for Deontay? I don't think so.
Right. I don't see it as well either. The key takeaway here from going, and I'll have all the data and all sorted and all like that, but in the same way that 2000, and we can quickly review to 2023, because even though we talked about it, we didn't talk about the particulars of it there. But the main takeaway, what we were looking for, at least in the targets and the targets along from 2021, was, you know, How he performed on the outside, what kind of coverages and all like that did he face? And, you know, once again, while he did see some defenders up against him in kind of more press type situations there, there wasn't a lot of it. Now, it's not like he can't win on the outside. In other words, one of the main concerns, I think, you know, not necessarily a concern, something that we want to see more of as he starts his NFL career is how he does against press type man situations.
Right. That'll be big. And even just like you said, not always being motioned in space off of boot action or just some of that pre-snap motion. I mean, that'll happen and that's fine. It's a useful, you know, tool in the tool belt of offenses, but you sometimes just have to line up conventionally and work your hands and work your feet to win off the line. That's just part of being an NFL receiver.
Right. And let's see, another thing that stuck out to me in the 2021 contextualization versus 2023, man, in 2023, he had a lot of catches and targets over the middle of the field. And by the end of the middle of the field, I'm meaning right between the hash marks as well, too. And obviously the hash marks are a little bit wider there, but even so, it's really recognizable when you see a player get that many targets, that many receptions there. In 2021, he had 5 targets in total between the hash marks overall. He caught 2 of those for, let's see, 39 yards. One of those was just a little flip. One of those, the air yards on those 2 that he caught were 10 and 9 yards respectively. There. So there's that portion of it. He did have a 38, the one that he caught 10 yards past the line of scrimmage, I think against Rutgers, went for 38 yards in total, had 28 yards of yak overall. So not the amount of over the field, middle of the field type stuff in 2021. Of course, he was a younger player. It didn't seem like they used as much motion in the offense, that kind of thing there. Now, when you look at the contextualization, the numbers as a whole from 2023, you see a player that, let's see, we'll get into this a little deeper here. He registered an average depth of target of 13.9 yards past the line of scrimmage in 2023. His average depth of completion was 12.8 yards. That's impressive. His 12 touchdowns that he had, I looked at the average depth of target, and even those within that, if the ball was caught in the end zone, I gave him the extra yards for however depth of target it was into the end. It's only fair, right? I mean, sure. If you're 5 yards into the end zone and the ball's at the 10-yard line, you should get 15 air yards for that, right? His average depth of target on those 12 touchdowns was 18.6 yards past the line of scrimmage. So that was quite impressive. One thing that probably wasn't as impressive maybe was his yards after the catch total in general there. You'd like to see that maybe a little bit higher for a college player. Overall, I think he had, where are those? Finding it hard to read my own stuff here, but let's see. Oh, here it is. 221 of Wilson's receiving yards in 2000. Somebody changed, edited my paragraph there. That's why I couldn't find it. 221 of Wilson's receiving yards in 2023 came after the catch. He was targeted 67 times in total, which resulted in a 71.6% catch rate. The takeaway at the 2023 contextualization overall, once again, he had a lot of over middle of the field stuff there, which is good for him, is he did a really great job of everything with the off coverages that he saw, whether it be zone or kind of a man off zone type situation. He really had a good awareness of where to settle specifically against zones and how to beat some of these coverages over the middle. A lot of great separation in there overall as well too. So, but once again, I think the main takeaway after looking at 2021 and 2023 tape here is that he's going to probably be more of an inside slot type guy. And when he does play on the outside, it's probably going to be on more of these condensed formations, maybe outside in bunch, maybe closer to the line of scrimmage situations where you can get him free releases a lot easier.
Let me ask you this. I know you're still putting together some of the data, but in the 21 tape with him on the outside more, what kind of route tree was he running? Did it feel pretty advanced, or did it feel a lot of site adjustments, either just break down on a curl against off coverage or converted vertical?
Yeah, it's not a large variance. I didn't feel in the 2021 okay. Route tree there. It really is limited.
Okay. Well, at least there's some tape on the outside, and we'll look forward to that and getting maybe some final conclusions whenever they come in, whenever that post drops, probably what, later this week, you think?
No, probably today on 2021. Okay. I mean, I've got the data. I just got to write the post now. But once again, I mean, we're this look at 2021's on 39 targets. To get a real solid feel on complete route tree, you know, you obviously have to take a larger section of tape there. Now, the guys at reception perception, who I think just do a magnificent job at looking at stuff overall, have a look at Roman Wilson's success by route in 2023. And his money on basically what, you know, the green when it comes to reception perception is the dig route at 93.3% success, the comeback at 100%, the screen game 100%, where he was moderate at would have been the curl route at 76.9%, anything in the flat, which he does, he's really, really good at those outbreaking kind of flat routes within you know, well within 12 yards. I think he does that real good. And the nine route at 57.1%, kind of moderate success there. They go on to dig deeper. Man against man coverage rates in 2023, that was 51.8%. Now, they don't, you know, I would view that as more man off, right?
Wait, can you repeat that?
Because they have press coverage listed in it. They're, on their coverage types on reception perception, they've got man, zone, press, and double. And the man, you would think more is man off, right?
Yeah, but I guess if the differentiation between press and man, then yeah, it'd be more, yeah, man off, yeah.
Right. So they have 51.8% of his routes being run last season, and him having a 62.4% success rate against those in a 19th percentile against zone, 48.2% of his routes run against that with a success rate of 72.2% in the 11th percentile. As far as press goes, they have only 11% of his routes run in 2023 against that, just a 50% success rate in the 15th percentile. And then in double coverage, very, you know, obviously very few of that, 3.7%, but he did have a 83.3% success rate of that. So those are just numbers, but it's just something to look for when you go in a larger swath of his 2023 tape.
Yeah, good information. Looking forward to the full post whenever it goes up on the site, probably later today. So we'll maybe revisit those conversations briefly on Friday. I do want to mention as well, there was a clip from the Jets kind of behind the scenes docuseries on their, you know, draft day weekend. And the Jets were considering taking Rowan Wilson in the either second or third round ahead of Pittsburgh, had they been unable to land Malachi Corley, who they ultimately traded up a couple spots to get. And so had Corley been off the board, the trade not worked out, then Rowan Wilson is almost certainly a Jet today, not a Steeler.
Yeah, but I mean, we're talking about two really different receivers there, aren't we?
Yeah, I mean, they're both slot types, but they are certainly built differently in terms of how they win.
Right, and especially you look at average yards per or depth of target and average depth of completion and stuff like that. I mean, it really different kind of guys.
But Corley was like a 101. There weren't many guys like Malachi Corley in this year's draft.
Right.
But I mean, they were going to consider taking him at 53 if they were able to move up, I think was one of the clips they had showed. And obviously that didn't occur and they couldn't get a deal done. Joe Douglas, the GM, was working the phones really hard, maybe even called Omar Khan. We don't know. It's not in the clip, but he was calling teams starting around that 48, 50, 55 range, trying to go up. Obviously, Pittsburgh did not. Khan said they'd always gotten calls throughout the draft. Maybe there was a conversation there, but just to see how things play out. So if you're happy Rowan Wilson is a Steeler, thank the Jets, thank the Panthers for getting a deal done to allow the Jets to go up and get Malachi Corley.
All right. Moving on from Roman, what we got?
Yeah, have our undrafted free agent profiles been going up again. Just only had to do three of them because we already had two of the five once the signings came in on Saturday evening. So I did Dejon Edwards, the running back from Georgia, and he led the Bulldogs in rushing this year, which is, you know, people that really don't talk about him despite him being the leading rusher for a powerhouse type of a team. He's a tough customer. I mean, he's quick. He makes guys miss in space. He's got good contact balance, a very low center of gravity. He's 5'9". My phrase for him in my notes was annoyingly hard to tackle. Like he would just bounce off you or just make a quick cut to the inside, a jump cut. He's good laterally. There is really no long speed, no second gear. And so he's really he's not a get what's blocked type of a runner, but he's not going to make plays at the third level where he's going to turn that 10-yard run with space into a 30-yard run. He's very limited in that sense, but good pass protector, willing, stout, strong, good anchor, competent out of the backfield, not an advanced route tree, but can catch and make a guy miss in space. So he's going to be a tough runner. The power is not overwhelming, but those leg drive and those finish and an attitude to run hard with good pad level. He certainly is short and low center of gravity, and it's hard to get that guy down. So some fun tape to watch. You know, again, running back in Pittsburgh, the top three are pretty much locked in. Harris, Warren, and Patterson for kick returns, but I could see Edwards being a practice squad type.
Here's some deeper stats on him. In 2023, on 165 attempts, seven of those were 20 plus yards.
Okay.
What's that percentage break down to? What is
165, you said?
Right.
That is 4.2%.
Okay. In 2022, if I can get it to pull up here, he had 140 attempts. Eight went for 20 or plus more yards.
So 5.7%.
In 2021, he had 49 attempts. Two of them went for 20 plus yards.
So 4.1%. So he's in that 4 to 5% range.
And then even in 2020, 37 attempts and two of them went for 20 plus.
So yeah, 5.4%. So pretty consistent numbers overall on him.
Right. Right. As far as an explosive play rate goes, so I haven't watched as much tape on him as you have, but what did jump out on me is he can break some ankles at the line of scrimmage.
Yeah, very quick laterally. That's his calling card in terms of being able to move down a gap. He's got vision and patience, too. There were some trying to say he's Le'Veon Bell. It's a little shades of that in the sense of that kind of stop, wait. It's not to that extreme, but I mean, he's a patient guy. It's easy to be patient when you're running behind the Georgia offensive line, which helps certainly some, but there is certainly an element of patience and vision, being able to press holes and just change your direction. That's what I'm trying to say is pretty impressive.
All right, for a little bit of an undersized guy, how about pass protection?
Yeah, like I mentioned, it's really good. I mean, he's a Jaylen Warren type. I mean, he put his face in the fan. I had a clip of him blocking Trayvon Wallace from Kentucky from this past season. His ID is strong. He's stout. Again, there's a size component where guys will kind of dwarf him when they're blitzing, but it does not phase Edwards one bit. So he's a guy that can pass protect. Also, has special teams value. He's played a bunch on the coverage team, return team, not as the return man, but as an up guy, blockers. So there's a he didn't do it this past year because he was their lead running back, but his 3 years prior at Georgia, even when he was working in as a committee in 22, he was working on special teams. He's been a four-phase kind of a guy. He's played over 100 snaps on teams at least each of the last two seasons. So that's a component that's going to serve him well to make the practice squad.
All right.
So interesting guy. I mean, again, upside's not huge, but he'll have a couple of fun runs, there'll be some clips of him breaking ankles, as you said, in training camp. I'm pretty sure of that.
All right. And we got a decent, got an idea about the explosive play rate on him.
Do you want to go through, I know it's, and I literally spell this out, it is way too early, but I put my Steelers way too early roster prediction up on the site this morning. Do you want to just run through that here to fill some time as to kind of get your initial thoughts? I know things will change and we'll have a new version of this before camp, but want to get your thoughts here on my prediction, Dave.
Real quick, I just had to research because I know before the draft of Najee Harris, I went through all the backs and got their explosive play percentage on attempts there. You had Michael Carter in that class at an 8.2% explosive play run rate. Travis Etienne at 8.0, Javonte Williams at 6.8, Trey Sermon at 6.8. Gainwell 6.4, Chuba Hubbard at 5.6, Najee Harris at 4.1. So he's got around somewhere between Najee Harris and Chuba Hubbard explosive play rate.
Yeah, and we'll have to see the context that. I mean, I don't know how many of those were 20 yards or 50 yards, and the difference between it's like Najee, right? He was the second most carries of 20 plus yards last year. But his long was 25, and so it's very much just to that bar and not past it. The tape didn't necessarily say an explosive, and when you're in Georgia, are you getting some of those runs against, you know, Lamar or whatever school they were facing that year that's, you know, lower level? I'm not quite sure, but a fun runner overall.
All right.
We should mention actually just on the running back, since you mentioned it, the fifth year options are due by tomorrow. And so most teams I think have made their decisions on if they're exercising or declining. Pittsburgh has done nothing so far. We fully expect Justin Fields to have his option decline. That's a no brainer. Harris to me is almost the same in the opposite direction. And I mean, I can't see them declining the option on Najee Harris.
I'll be a bit surprised if they decline it. And like you said, that should come in probably today, I would think.
Is it? Yeah, I mean, it's either today or tomorrow. I know ETN got his picked up. Not that it matters much for Pittsburgh's calculation, but I mean, ETN had gotten hurt, had a good year, I think 2 years ago, and maybe a bit more of a down year. Maybe this past year, I think he had a good game against the Steelers. So yeah, I would expect, I expect Harris to have that extra, that option exercised.
All right, let's have a look at your way too early 53-man roster prediction. Way too early.
Way too early.
But they're always fun to look at and then look back at.
And I keep interrupting myself, but we will get there. But I just saw your tweet that Presley Harvin has a tryout with the Bucs in rookie minicamp. So good luck to Presley Harvin and Buccaneers rookie minicamp.
Yeah, we'll see if he gets signed.
All right, at quarterback, I have three: Russell Wilson, Justin Fields, Kyle Allen. Feels pretty chalk. You could debate with the new modification to the emergency third quarterback rule where he can be promoted from the practice squad, or elevated from the practice squad, I should say more precisely. There's a reason to keep two, but I think Pittsburgh values the depth, and they always keep three, so I will say they keep three.
What is the rule about elevate that counts as an elevation though, right? Even though there's no limit to it,
right? You can, my understanding is you can elevate a quarterback to be the emergency third quarterback off your practice squad. Last year you could not have an elevation, a quarterback be in service your number three. I don't believe there's a limit to that, but I believe, and I can't say that 100%. I saw one reporter make a comment about this. That's where I make the statement from, is that it will still count as one of your two weekly allotted elevations. So if you have two guys that are hurt and you're planning on having two elevations to replace the injury aspect of your linebacker and receiver, for example, your quarterback takes up one of those spots, is my understanding of it. So there actually is a cost to that elevation. It's not a freebie that you can get to just yo-yo the entire year.
All right, we'll drill that down a little bit more specifically in the next couple of weeks. As far as that rule goes.
You would agree, though, just off the top, it's most likely to keep those three, Wilson, Fields, and Allen?
It feels like it. It feels like they're not going to sway from that.
Right. Running back, Najee Harris, Jalen Warren, Cordarrelle Patterson. Again, to me, this is pretty cut and dry.
Yeah, to me as well, too. And obviously, Cordarrelle Patterson, mostly your kick returner. But, man, he's got experience in the backfield. I mean, you could do worse for a emergency number three running back, right?
For sure. Fullback, none. Tight end, I'm keeping four. Very much an Arthur Smith thing to do. Tight end heavy: Pat Freiermuth, Darnell Washington, Connor Hayward, and Michael Pruitt. Even Rodney Williams will be in the mix as well. It should be a fun group to watch in camp, but I think those are the four.
Man, Hot Rod gives you enough on special teams. I the only change I would make here on the way too early would, I'd put Rodney Williams in there instead of Michael Pruitt.
I get that, but Pruitt, better blocker, and the Arthur Smith familiarity, I think, gives him this slight edge.
All right. I bet Danny Smith, your buddy Danny Smith, disagrees.
Fair enough. Receiver, I have five, and you can just kind of get the sense this team needs to add another name. My five here are George Pickens, Roman Wilson, Calvin Austin, going Marquez Callaway as a sleeper, had success with the Saints a couple of years ago, and Van Jefferson gets the nod over Quez Watkins. But again, the takeaway to me is this team needs more talent at receiver.
Yeah, Callaway is going to be a fun guy to watch the rest of the offseason, I think, because he did actually put something down on tape with the Saints a few years ago. I mean, still, look, he's still a long shot and all, but based on what's under contract right now until something else happens, not a bad dart throw.
Yeah, in 2021, he had 46 receptions for basically 700 yards, over 15 yards per catch, and six touchdowns with the Saints. His numbers fell off in 2022, just 16 receptions, and then he did not catch a pass last season. I don't know exactly what happened with New Orleans. I know Michael Thomas being hurt a lot probably opened some doors for them there. So I can't really speak to why things fell off the way that they did, but he's still how old? Still just 26 years old, right. Got some size, team looking for outside help. I could have put a placeholder veteran in here. I don't do those for these posts most of the time. I won't just put, you know, they'll sign somebody. I just stick with guys who are currently Pittsburgh Steelers. I'm confident they will add somebody. But for now, I think Callaway's a name to watch.
What did Callaway log as far as special team snaps go?
I don't think much. His rookie year, he had 84. He had zero last year, but only played in three games, 17. in 2022, 10 in 2021. So not much special teams value.
Did when he did play, was he a gunner?
I don't know off the top of my head.
What year? 2022?
It looks like he was doing returns. Yeah, 2020 was the year he had 84 snaps and he had 11 punt returns, 4 kick returns. So I'm going to assume they basically all came in a return man capacity.
Okay. All right. He might have to learn how to play some gunner.
He may have to show something there. That's where also a Des Fitzpatrick could try to make some noise because he impressed as a gunner last year and earned a practice squad spot, I think, in large part because of that.
All right, my hope is that it gets a little bit deeper than this.
My hope, my plea is that it gets more depth than this. Offensive tackle, keeping 4, Broderick Jones, Troy Fa'utanu, Dan Moore Jr., and Dylan Cook. I know some may wrinkle their nose at Dan Moore. Could he be off this roster in some capacity for 2024? That's possible, but I think the team will value having experienced and I would say competent, hardworking professional left tackle, even if he's basically only a left tackle only as a backup. I know that the team, you know, you typically, if you're a backup, you better be versatile, but because the experience, the cheapness of his contract and the premium value on left tackles, I think that he still has a chance to make this team as that backup.
Right. I would agree with your 4 here. We need more reason not to have Dan Moore on here.
For sure. For sure. I mean, Fa'utanu has to win the job, which is not cemented yet. We think he will probably do it on one of the tackle spots, but he still has to do it. And so until there's big reason to assume that Moore lacks that value at all, I'm going to keep him there. Then Cook, I think it's a big year for Dylan Cook. I'm excited about him. I think he's a real sleeper for this team that shined in camp last year. They kept him on the 53 because they knew he would be claimed on waivers had they tried to pass him through. And so that's a guy I'm certainly watching.
Agreed. Dylan Cook is certainly a name to watch there. All right, guards.
4 of them, Isaac Seumalo, James Daniels, Nate Herbig, and rookie 4th-round pick Mason McCormick, to me, pretty chalk, pretty obvious here.
Right, and same with, obviously, rookie center Zach Frazier there. So you have 9 total offensive linemen. That feels like it's going to be the right number. Obviously, you hope all these guys stay healthy, and obviously you don't have Spencer Anderson in this group.
Correct. He is odd man out. He's on my practice squad. Could he compete? I just wasn't sure. Are you going to keep 10? It feels a little heavy. And if you keep 9, who does he beat out? If you did something with Dan Moore, then maybe. If Dylan Cook does not look good, then maybe. But the numbers just start getting, there's a number crunch here for Spencer Anderson.
So what does that give you? 24 on offense?
Correct. 24 on offense.
All right. Defense.
Defensive line, 6 of them, they keep, you know, 6 or 7. Cam Hayward, Larry Ogunjobi, Dean Lowry, Isaiah Loudermilk at end, at nose tackle, Keanu Benton, Montrevious Adams. Won't call the D-line, you know, super strong, but there should be competition there the way that there was last year. No DeMarvin Leal, I don't have him on my list. No Logan Lee, the one rookie who does not make it is Logan Lee. Could he? He could, but I'll go with Loudermilk, who is, you know, traditional base run stuffer, and Lowry kind of is too. They're a little redundant, I suppose, Lowry and Loudermilk, but there are guys that can stop the run.
All right, that's a fair stab this early.
All right, edge rusher, TJ Watt, Alex Highsmith, Nate Herbig, and I should put Nick Herbig and Jeremiah Moon as the 4. I think Moon's a good number 4, special teams guy, developmental type. I think he'll have a good camp.
That will be a fun guy to watch because of the experience he does have on the defensive side of the football and on special teams. So you would expect Nick Herbig to take a little bit of a jump up the depth chart and become potentially that number 3 behind Watt and Alex Highsmith, and who will be the 4th. Because right. they'll keep at least 4 edge rushers, you would think, and whoever is number 4 better be able to play special teams.
And Moon can. That was what he did primarily in Baltimore last year, had that forced fumble on Gunnar Olszewski in that Week 5 Steelers-Ravens meeting on that punt return. Inside linebacker, this one gets tricky. A lot of questions here with Cole Holcomb, but I'm going Patrick Queen, Landon Roberts, Peyton Wilson, Cole Holcomb, and Mark Robinson getting that 5th and final spot. I just don't know on Holcomb. Will he begin the year on reserve pup? Will he be just inactive? I don't know what's going to happen with him, and that will have an impact on Mark Robinson's standing.
Right. And if they it feels like they've got to keep five because you're not going to make Patrick Queen or Landon Roberts or Cole Holcomb, assuming he is healthy enough to make the roster, play on special teams.
Yeah, I mean, it depends on how many, you know, edge guys could do it. We know Moon could do it. And, you know, last year they basically, you know, didn't have, you know, Marcus Golden was unable to play special teams. Could Herbig still play some special teams? He probably will. So could you potentially fill in the cracks elsewhere? Potentially. But I think you still keep Robinson until you get more clarity on Cole Holcomb's situation.
All right, cornerbacks.
Yeah, again, another group where you look at and say you could use another name here from the outside, but Joey Porter Jr., Dante Jackson, Darius Rush, Corey Trice Jr., Ryan Watts, and I'll put the undrafted kid Beanie Bishop on there given the lack of options in the slot right now. Frankly, from this list, I'm not even sure who your slot corner is going to be. It might be Beanie Bishop. So, again, that's the concern there, but there's going to be a lot of young guys trying to prove themselves in camp. This might be one of the most competitive spots because there just is so much youth and talent. But guys that really have to show that they can apply that talent to the field.
Is it fair for most of the, until we get clarity, to call Ryan Watts just a DB?
Yeah, I call him anything, defensive back. I had to put him somewhere. I mean, he'll probably play a bunch of different stuff in camp, I'm going to guess. You can call him a corner and call him a safety. DB is a good catch-all.
It'll be interesting to watch that group play out. And boy, it sure would be nice if Corey Trice can stay healthy and give him something.
For sure. And then at safety, Minkah Fitzpatrick, Deshaun Elliott.
Why no Rush on there? Darius Rush.
Rush is on there.
Oh, he is on there. I missed him. I'm sorry.
I kept Rush and Trice. Yep. And then at safety, Minkah Fitzpatrick, Deshaun Elliott, Demonte Casey, Miles Killebrew, and Trenton Thompson. Similar group to last year. Swap out Keanu Neal. Bring in Deshaun Elliott. Neal no longer a Pittsburgh Steeler. This seems, I think, pretty secure.
Yeah, Miles Killebrew, obviously your special teams guy there. You hope you don't get situations where you have to play him a lot of snaps as a safety there. All right, I understand it.
As was the case last year with Killebrew. And then Thompson, I think he's been solid and impressed whenever he's been given the opportunity since being signed mid-camp last year. Special teams, very
I bet obvious. You hit all three of these barring injuries.
I like my odds. Chris Boswell, Cameron Johnston, and Christian Kuntz, your specialists.
All right, practice squad.
Yeah, you talk about guesses at this point. This will change by leaps and bounds. Obviously, 16 names. Dejon Edwards at running back. Jack Coletto at fullback. Receiver, Des Fitzpatrick. I'm going to keep, maybe I'm biased here, but saying that John Rhys Plumlee will eventually move to wide receiver. I put him as a receiver here for my practice squad. Rodney Williams at tight end. A couple of linemen, Devery Hamilton, Tyler Beach, Spencer Anderson. Defensively, D-line Logan Lee makes it to the practice squad. Braden Fajoco. Welshoff should have that international exemption, so he will not count against the practice squad. So you put him there. Kyron Johnson at the edge. Tyler Murray, off-ball linebacker. And four DBs and Thomas Graham, Josiah Scott, Luke Barku, and Jalen Elliott at safety.
All right, good first stab this way too early. What was for a way too early 53-man roster prediction, what was kind of the toughest decisions?
Trying to find 53 guys worthy to make it. trying a little light at corner, a little light at receiver. There are some open spots for the taking, I feel like.
All right, to make the listeners feel like they have the upper hand here, you will not hit all 53 of these.
A bold prediction. Bye, Dave. I'm coming to go. It's like saying I won't have a perfect March Madness bracket. I think you're right about that.
Yeah. I mean, look, obviously you're going to have a lot of these right here, but there is, it'll be, as always, it'll be fun to look back on these. I think two or three people, not even under contract, will wind up on this list here at some point here. But good exercise that we normally, one of us likes to do right out of the chute here.
All right, Dave, anything else to discuss? Any other topics for us to talk about for this Wednesday show?
Anything else coming in here?
Just kind of scroll through again. Harvin to Buccaneers rookie mini camp.
What'd you think about Brandon Thorne's analysis of Mason McCormick?
Yeah, he's lower on McCormick than most people and basically saying he didn't see the same athleticism in his testing, which was very strong for McCormick, a great RAS number. He didn't see that apply to the tape, and he had a fifth round grade on McCormick, and Pittsburgh took him fourth round. So it's not it's not that much of a difference, not much of a delta between where Pittsburgh had him and where Thorne had him, but interesting and valid, and I really respect Thorne's opinion, so I think it's something certainly worth considering.
I see a lot of people on Twitter saying, who is Brandon Thorne? I've never heard of him.
Yeah, I mean,
we obviously know who he is.
Sure.
Tell him why.
Yeah, Brandon's a guy I've known for a long time, been to the Senior Bowl, really good guy. I mean, he's an O-line connoisseur. He's somebody that studied offensive line and works with Duke Mannyweather, who I think most people have heard of as an O-line trainer and guru. And Thorne is just like, that's where his expertise comes in. He's somebody that really studies the position, loves the position, appreciates it, breaks down the tape really well. So, yeah, he's probably not, you know, A-list name to the more casual football fan, which I don't say is a slight to fans or to Brandon Thorne. He's a guy on Twitter. If you're not on Twitter, you probably maybe haven't heard of him as much, but somebody that I respect and somebody that I know knows his stuff and gives great insights on offensive linemen, has interviewed a bunch of the class this year. I mean, he was happy with he loved the Fagutanu pick. He loved the Frazier pick. Those were his guys. And so he certainly, I think, likes what Pittsburgh has done overall. But, you know, we agreed that when you watch McCormick on tape, he was not as athletic right. as he tested at the combine.
Interesting, though, that Thorne does admit something that I pointed out, that as a puller was all of his best film.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of the Kimiatu vibe that I think you had referenced one time last couple of shows, where that guy can pull and smash your face.
All right. And look, I can guarantee you a guy his size, you look at him, there's probably not many people that owe him money.
That is for sure. So, yeah, again, Thorne's critique is fair and valid, and we'll see how things work out.
Okay. Anything else we would like to get to on this Wednesday?
No, I think we're good. Let's get to some reader emails and close out today's show.
All right. From LM, when the term slot receiver is used, I'm curious how many of our two receiver sets involve one in the slot versus both outside. Similarly, with Roman Wilson primarily playing in the slot at Michigan, how many are two receiver sets versus three or four?
He's saying, can you run that back? I got
he
the message.
He says, I'm curious how many of our, when the term slot receiver is used, I'm curious how many of our two receiver sets involve one in the slot versus both outside. Okay. Similarly, with Roman Wilson primarily playing slot at Michigan, how many are two receiver sets versus three or four? I'll tell you on the Michigan aspect of it, I mean, they generally had a lot of, in other words, they didn't run a lot of 12 personnel, 13 personnel.
So it was a lot of true slot where it was right. Three receivers and he's, you know, a slot receiver. Yeah. I don't know the numbers on twin receiver sets. It's not above 50%. It's going to be a fraction of the overall total, 10, 20%. I couldn't tell you, but it's not the majority.
The sense I'm getting here from listeners and readers is, you know, why can't he play on the out? Why can't he play out on the outside? It's not that he can't play on the outside. It's just from what you see when he is on the outside, it's more condensed kind of formations. And we just need, there's not a lot of tape to support him as like a true outside guy going against like press man stuff. We just noted earlier in the show, you go back to that 2000, that might be his best rep. There's just not a lot that has us beg. It has us begging for more of the tape of him on the outside.
Yeah, I mean, it's just a question of how did he win at Michigan? He won in the slot. He won inside. He didn't have to work on beating press. And so, again, those are things he could work on and could potentially be successful at the NFL level. But we're just going off of how did he win in college, and he didn't win in the ways that, you know, you might be talking about him as an outside type of receiver. So that creates additional projection if you're trying to ask him to do that. And, you know, as a smaller guy that's not incredibly strong, we'll have some challenges versus press coverage. It's not something that's impossible to overcome, but I think he will have to get stronger to be a more effective outside kind of a guy.
All right, Brett Niles already concerned about the 2025 draft picks. He says, I know that you probably don't want to think about next year's draft yet, but I was curious about how many picks the Steelers will have in that draft. So I researched it and wanted to share with you and the listeners and have you confirm the information. He says the team has all of its own picks except for the one going to the Bears for Justin Fields. He says, nominally a six rounder for now, but even if it's a fourth, that won't change the total. He says they have a fifth rounder coming from LA for Kevin Dotson, a six rounder from Houston for Kendrick Green, and a second and a seventh rounders from Philly for Kenny Pickett.
A second from Philly?
No, and 2 7th rounders from Philly for Kenny Pickett. So by my count, they have 10 picks in next year's draft, with most of those coming in day three. Does that sound right? Blah blah blah. Do you think this will make them more aggressive trading between now and their week one game? Thanks for all you do. And oh, by the way, I do believe, while no one got all the picks in any one draft, I do believe that all the picks were in one of the Depot mock drafts. So, and since you did predict every pick, look, the biggest thing when it comes to mocks, once again, is when you look, and that's why we run the contest in the manner that we do. We allow people to pick 50 players and then pick the round for each player you think that play. In other words, what we want to do is we want to see out of the main thing here is with that contest is giving people to pick 50 players and hopefully in some way, shape, or form, they get all the draft picks out of those 50. And then obviously you'd like to see people nail a couple of rounds, which I'm sure happened within this. But I really think as a personal own mock draft exercise that people should have every year, let's assume that it's 7 picks that a team has. Man, if you can name 50 players and get all 7 picks in that, that's fantastic.
Mm-hmm. Although, was he referring to that or referring to our collective Steelers Depot mock drafts?
Maybe he was talking about our collective mock drafts. I don't know.
Yeah, that was my first read on it. But I think your comment still stands for that contest. Although, I don't believe none of us had Troy Faletonu in the first round. I think it's the one name
right
we were missing. I'm not sure if anyone had Peyton Wilson. Maybe somebody had Peyton Wilson. I think somebody actually did. But I think Faletonu, funny enough, the first round pick was not in any of our mock drafts.
About the draft picks here, I will tell you that the NFL officially has listed with the Kenny Pickett trade as I'm trying to scroll up and find it here. I have it in the media file section here. Let's see. Pittsburgh trades Kenny Pickett and selection choice round 4 of the 2024 draft pick, which has already happened. Philadelphia traded round 3, 2024, and then the 2 7th round picks that Philly traded the Steelers as part of the Kenny Pickett are listed as conditional picks.
Which is interesting, and I think new information, because I was not aware, and correct me if I'm wrong, Dave, I was not aware of any conditions on those selections announced or reported before.
I searched the internet and I searched Twitter and I could not find any wording of conditional within there. Now, what I'm telling you is what officially is listed on the NFL transaction sheet. And that's the gospel here.
Mm-hmm. All right? It's a good source.
That is the gospel. And it says that the 2 7th rounders from Philly are conditional picks. What are those conditions? Good luck finding that unless it's not reported there. I would imagine, and don't hold me to this, but it's probably snap percentage related, much in the same way that kind of the Justin Fields, the 6th versus the 4th is.
Right, but that's to say that the picks can't get worse. They can only improve if Pickett were to play more. Is that the angle to assume here?
I don't know. I don't know. All I know is those are conditional picks. I mean, I suppose I could find the Fields listing of how that is listed on the site. My initial kind of takeaway here is that maybe snap conditions need to be met in order for the Steelers to get both those seventh rounders.
But what would he have for a backup quarterback? What would the snap condition be? You can't put it at 50% to get a seventh round pick. If he played a snap, you should get the pick for it or something like that. I would think it'd be a conditional seventh that might turn into a conditional fifth, whatever, if he plays half the snaps. I don't know, obviously, but I have to assume it can only go up, and it can't get worse than potentially not getting any picks if some situation occurs.
I'm going to try to find the Fields trade information here.
Fields can't get worse. At worst, Chicago gets a sixth-round pick. If Fields sits on the bench the entire season, if he's cut tomorrow, which he won't, but if he's cut tomorrow, they get a sixth-round pick. That is locked in. It cannot be worse than that. It can only get better, become a fourth if he plays 51% of the Steelers' offensive snaps. I assume if there are conditions to the pick deal, it's structured in a similar sense.
All right, here's how NFL Communications listed the Justin Fields trade. Round 6, 2025 from Houston. In other words, it's via Houston, and it just says conditional next to it. So, yeah, maybe there's something that's the problem. I mean, it could be any language whatsoever.
Sure.
We are just guessing here. So could it be something along the lines that the Steelers automatically get the seventh round pick? Because remember, you had the same situation conditional with the William Jackson trade.
Right. And they gave up nothing for that. I think Levi Brown was another example where it was a conditional pick where nothing was given up. So, yes, there are times where conditions can become nothing. But I can't see that applying to the Kenny Pickett situation. Maybe okay. I'm wrong.
All right. Fact of the matter is we don't know.
Right.
That's what it boils down to. So he's wanting, and then on the Kevin Dotson trade, that one was the Rams traded a fourth rounder in 2025. And then the Steelers got the Rams fifth round pick in the Rams traded a 2024 fourth rounder to the Steelers, which obviously has been used now. And then the Steelers also get a round 5, 2025, but in turn, they gave up a round 6, 2025. They swapped the six for a fifth in as far as that goes there. What was the Kendrick Green one?
Wasn't it a seventh round? I think that one might have been a conditional pick too. It was obviously very little, a sixth, seventh round selection to Houston gave back.
Let me see if I can. When did that happen?
End of camp cutdown date, August of
29th or something like that.
Yeah, I don't know the exact date. It would have been late August. Again, it was on cutdown date, I'm pretty sure, when they dealt him. So whenever that was, last couple days, last day of August.
Let me see if I can find any particulars on that real quick here. Oh, I found it here. Selection choice, round 6, 2025.
No conditions.
No conditions.
Okay. Just to go back one more time, on the Pickett deal, it says both seventh rounders are conditional. There are conditional tags on both of them.
Yes.
Here's my guess of what it is. It's going to be a conditional either, you know, it's two seventh round picks at worst. My guess is it can't get worse for Pittsburgh on that. If Pickett plays X amount of snaps, X percentage of snaps, let's just say 51%, it becomes one fifth round pick, something like that. To have conditions on both selections tells me it's either going to be two sevenths or one higher round if Pickett has a certain benchmark he reaches.
Now, here's the other thing. I suppose it could be related to whichever one of these is higher or so, you know, higher anyway, you know, maybe the seventh round pick is the terms that should Philadelphia acquire another seventh rounder in some way, shape or form. Maybe this year we're spinning our wheels.
Yeah, kind of getting NBA terms on this. Yeah,
we're getting into something that we don't have the answer to here. And then now on top of it here, he wants us to speculate on picks that we don't know what the Steelers have yet. or even if they'll have 10 picks, he wants us to speculate if they will be more aggressive in trading up before their week one game this season.
Well, I think it's fair to say if they do have extra capital that you are inherently more, you know, willing and able to do those kinds of things.
He wants to know before week one this season, I guess.
Yeah, could they make it, you know, make a trade late August before camp, the way that, you know, the Rams took on Dotson and the Texans took on Kendrick Green? Could they add somebody? And they've done that in the past, Jesse Davis, and there's some more notable names out there.
Here's the easy way to answer this. Yes, Brett, it is conceivable that the Steelers trade.
Sure, but I understand his point. He's saying if there is more capital, that would make them more likely to trade. Yes, that right. is a fair thought, but it just depends on a million variables, and we'll cross that bridge when we come to it.
We've got a long way to go before we have to worry about that. Let's see here. Dan Devlin. Good day, gents. Great coverage. Great draft coverage per usual. I believe you mentioned the Steelers broke from many of their typical Blues clues. Anything you notice that may have been hints moving forward? Number two, you mentioned that several teams shied away from Peyton Wilson because he may not make a second contract. He says, is a second contract a big deal? He has fourth round guy here, but it's really what, third round, right?
Yeah, third round for Peyton Wilson.
He says you want guys for as long as possible, but if Wilson starts for 2 years providing special teams help, is it worthwhile to pick? Number three, during your Shrine Bowl wrap, one of the guys was really high on Jarius Moore from Tulane as a safety slot option. Do you know if he hooked on with someone? Is this someone the Steelers could take on a flyer? Oh, boy, he's got a great memory, man.
Yeah, I wish I had that memory. I'll check on Monroe. I assume he signed somewhere. He signed with the Jets, UDFA okay. with the Jets. Yeah.
All right, that answers that portion there. As far as the whole – Dan makes a great point here. As far as people being concerned about Peyton Wilson in a second contract and even as a third-round guys, third-round guy, I don't think you – I just want the guy to play out his contract, you know, and if he does, and he's how many guys in the third round anyway across the league, if you look back, and not just second contracts, I'm talking second contracts that are notable second contracts. How many guys does that happen to percentage wise across the league? It's a low percentage.
Yeah, I don't. It's a great question. I would guess 40%. Just guessing that may be even too high. I think, though, the whole second contract thing, the concern here's the concern is, what is the longevity of Peyton Wilson? When you even say second contract, it doesn't mean it doesn't have to mean, OK, he plays his fourth year, the knee gives out in the final game of his fourth year and you don't bring him back. It could give out tomorrow. It could give out his rookie season training camp, a la Corey Trice. And then what do you do about the future of him? I think the concern is this guy is in the view of the teams that believe is a one contract player, is a ticking time bomb where that knee will eventually give out and he will no longer be able to play for you. Will that happen in year one? Will it happen in year four? That is the concern.
Sure, I get that, but why not just say that instead of saying he's not a second contract guy?
Well, it's a shorter, more concise. No, it's not. It's just a concise. It's just saying is that you're unlikely to give him a second contract for the health reasons.
Look, if this kid stays healthy for 80% of the game, stays on the roster for his entire rookie contract, even if he's just was Tyler Matakevich a successful pick for the Steelers?
Yes, but he's also a seventh round pick. Right, so there's a sliding scale of, you know, what you expect your third round pick. Because ideally, when you draft a guy in the third round, you hope and expect him to be with your team past his rookie contract.
Right. But what I'm trying to say is, even if Peyton Wilson is a spot player on defense and is a very good special teams player, even as a 98 overall, how is that looked at?
Yeah, we'll see. It wouldn't be viewed terribly. It may not be viewed super positively if he's only a special teams kind of a guy. We're just going to have to wait and see on that. It's all projections, all guessing. His career will be his career. We'll see it play out. You always weigh risk and reward, and the longer you can wait on a guy risk wise, then the more payoff you can get. And
right.
if it doesn't work out, then okay, it doesn't work out. And taking a guy at 20 with that kind of risk is different than taking a guy at 98. It's different than taking a guy at 250. The way it took Corey Trace at 240 something last year. That's really low risk, and you get the upside. If it doesn't work out, then you haven't lost a whole lot. So it's a fair question. We're just gonna have to wait and see.
Who was drafted 98 overall?
Oh God.
2023. Hit me.
Sure.
Let me see here. 98 overall. Siaka Ika from Baylor.
Big nose tackle. Yeah. So is he can he be better than Ika? Probably. He's not been too good in Cleveland last year. Where Darnell Washington went 90 overall, right? So you got the guy that fell. Where'd Darnell go last year? 93 overall. And so it's kind of funny to see those guys that have slipped because of knee concerns taken in the same area by the same team.
For hits and griggles, 98 overall in 2022 is Brian Robinson Jr., the running back out of Alabama.
Mm. Okay. Ooh. Yeah. Okay.
And what's he doing right now?
Well, he got shot his rookie year. Remember that whole story on him? And then he had gotten back and gotten healthy. He's done, I think, okay. He's got a role with him and Gibson down there in Washington.
And then 98 overall in 2021 was Quinn Meinerz.
It's funny that name shows up. Talked about him quite a bit in the pre-draft process.
And I'll go down a rabbit hole
one more time.
In 2020, Malik Harrison, inside linebacker, Ohio State, went to the Ravens.
Don't think he's doing a whole lot for them right now. I'll double check. He may be a special teams role. Let's see what Malik Harrison is up to. Actually started 8 games for him last year, although only 20 tackles. I'm not sure if it's a sub-package thing. I mean, he started some games for them. He's done okay, it looks like.
How many snaps has he played? Because that's 3 years into his career now, right? 20, 20. No, four.
Yeah, I don't even know if he re-signed with them or not. He had played 880 snaps on defense and over 1,200 on special teams. So a lot of special teams. Four-phase guy he was.
Okay. All right.
Can Wilson become that? If he becomes that, is that acceptable value?
I'd have to see the tape, I believe.
Yeah. But for Peyton, if I told you Peyton right. Wilson plays 1,200 snaps on special teams, 900 defensively. Are you happy with that?
As a low side, yeah. I think
as
so.
As a low side. But the concern, though, is, okay, the knee becomes a problem. You know, knock on wood, but he gets hurt as a rookie, you know, hurts his knee again, and the dude's just done from there. Then it's like, okay, that's why teams did not take him because there were those issues. Remember Travis Feeney? I know it's a later round pick, but he had those issues. So it's a different body type, but he had medically concerns, and he had injuries and just didn't do anything. If that happened with Peyton Wilson, then you sit there and say, okay, you shouldn't have taken that risk. It's all hindsight based. There's always risk you're assuming with any draft pick. We'll see how it turns out.
Here's the thing. Peyton Wilson will be on the 53-man roster if he stays healthy, plain and simple.
Yep. And we'll go from there and see how he looks.
Let's take one more from Joseph Thomas here. Is there a correlation between the immaculate health of the Steelers O-line the last 2 years and Pat Meyer? He says, can we attribute this health to a philosophy of Meyer? Maybe he encourages the players to keep their feet moving or something that would make them less likely to suffer lower body injuries, from Joseph. Look, I'm not even going to pretend that I know that anything that Pat Meyer is doing is helping with the health of this offensive line. I will say, though, I think I have heard guys like Omar Khan even mention the word lucky.
Yeah, I wish I had an answer. I think it is ultimately a lot of luck and good fortune. How many tackles get hurt because they just get rolled up on? Somebody falls into their leg. Like, that's just – you can't do anything. It's – one of my favorite jokes of all time. You listen to Ron White, blue collar comedy tour guys. One of my favorite jokes. He's talking about somebody not leaving his home. They're in a hurricane that's about to roll in because, you know, I'm tougher than the hurricane and I work out and all that. And You know, Ron White said, it's not that the wind is blowing, it's what the wind is blowing. If you get hit by a Volvo, I don't care how many push-ups you did that day. It's one of those things. You can be right. The most conditioned player possible. Dude rolls into your ankle, your leg, you know, gives out. It doesn't matter what your strength and conditioning program is. That happens sometimes. But if you avoid it and you're just fortunate to avoid it, then you are. So are there maybe some teachings with Pat Meyer? He does have a different way of teaching past sets, and they are more aggressive. Maybe that could help in some small respect. It's usually more of a strength and conditioning coach thing and individual player thing with the work they put in, taking care of their body. But I really think it's just a lot of good luck that Pittsburgh is on right now.
Yeah, Joseph, I wouldn't dare try to come up with correlation between Pat Meyer and that. I'll just say if there is a correlation, I hope it keeps correlating.
I hope so too. But my concern, I know it each year is different, but my concern is that check's going to bounce one of these days when you get, going to get 2024 where it's the year of O-line injuries. But Pittsburgh, to their credit, I think has created excellent O-line depth.
Would that be the law? Would that be factored in? Does that factor into the law of diminishing returns or no?
I wouldn't call it diminishing returns. It's just a law of averages where eventually if you have two great years of injury freeness, then you're probably eventually one of these years, it's going to go in the other direction. It's regression to the mean. It's law of averages. That's probably how I would categorize it.
I guess the law of diminishing returns would more apply to like a Krispy Kreme donut or donuts, right?
Yes. Where the first one's great. The 12th one, not so as great. Yeah, exactly. That's not sure where you pulled that one from, but I like the analogy.
Somebody told me, my old man might have told me that in describing the law of diminishing returns. I want that's the extent of my how I was educated.
that's how you mathed your Krispy Kreme math they're teaching you down in the South.
Yeah, redneck Dave. That's how he got it. Yeah. Look, I thought high school was year round.
you were in class in the summer, it sounds like.
Yeah, yeah. Yes. Yeah, I thought high school was year round. I always got kind of wondered why some of these other kids had more free time during the summer than I did.
You know, culturally, there are a lot of countries that do school year round, where it's not like a giant 3 month vacation in the summer. It's they're on for 3 months and they're off for 3 weeks. And studies have shown that's a better way to teach because teen schools, you don't have to relearn everything from a 3 month layoff.
Yeah, well, it didn't work out so well.
Right. Maybe you have to push a child for that initiative. I won't put you on the ballot.
No. That won't play well. Put Dave as the poster child for year round school there. We had some fun today. Had some great questions. Had some good things to talk about here. You and I will get back at it on Friday again. And look, I'm starting to get some emails now from people saying, "Do we have a winner from the?" From the mock draft contest. You folks got to give us a little bit of time. David O was out of town. I think he's back from Tunisia. Was where he was at. And I got a lot of these things and they come in an email in different form. Not all of them are spreadsheets. Some are just email. Some of them are PDFs. I had to forward all these to him in email. Now he's got to go through the painstaking process of putting all these together and grading. So please give us a little bit of time to get these graded. And in the meantime, I'm going to come up with, between now and next year, maybe a different way to accept these draft contest entries where they're kind of more unison and thus easily to grade. Maybe it's just some sort of Google form that has a scroll down with all the names in there that you have to select, and then maybe a fill in a blank or something if there's, you know, a name that I miss or what have you. But this is we put this contest on for listeners, for readers, but at the same token, it's not easy to grade, especially when you get well over 100 entries into this. So We'll get you the results, but we'll get you the results when we get you the results. Okay.
Yeah. So please be patient.
And poor David O, you know, I had to pay him extra to do this on top of it because it's not something good friends just do here. So just give us a little time on that. All right. In the meantime, you can follow me on Twitter / X at at Steelers Depot. Follow Alex at Alex underscore Gazora. Follow the show at Terrible Podcast. Email the show, theterriblepodcast at gmail.com. If you like what we do and want to donate to the cause, SteelersDepot.com. Hit the donate. Donate button up.
The donut button. The Krispy Kremes are back.
There you go. There's that education. Hit the donut button. Upright navigation bar. Either that or the donate button. You could donate a couple of Krispy Kremes. I wouldn't be mad about that. let's see. If you want an ad-free version of the site, SteelersDepot.com. Hit the ad-free button. Upright navigation bar. Also, well, let's see. I think that's got all of it. In the meantime, until Friday, as always, thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Alex.